Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, folks, the Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hallam, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmidt, and welcome to this fifth iteration of the long-running series, Jordan and Mark Look at a Few Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner Cartoons, because we missed them and it's been a while.
Yes, in honor of Acme vs. Coyote coming to theaters on March 30th, 2024, we've decided to look at some more... More Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons because
date
we
subject
love
to change. just figure we slide that in there. Yeah. Hey, Mark, yes. Wouldn't it be funny if by the time we have to do the sixth one of these, the movie still isn't fucking out?
Oh, if that doesn't happen, I'm going to go to Warner Brothers and. Because, listen, if they're going to take this fucking long to do the movie, the very least we could do is just sit back and watch some more Roadrunner Wile E. Coyote cartoons. That's what we're doing.
Like, we need an excuse. We always love doing this. And I think you guys really enjoy it, too. What we did was we picked three of them from different... Like usual when I curate these, I picked three from different eras. One from the very beginning, one from the meat of it of the late 50s, and one... toward the end, and I wanted to get a good mix of different styles and mindsets behind these. And I think that gave us a really eclectic bunch for this one.
Oh, yes. The shorts we are covering this week are Beep Beep, Scrambled Eggs, ending with Hop Along Casualty. Yes. A really good mix of Coyote cartoons, I gotta say, this week. Because, two of these shorts are ones where I'm like, oh, shit, that's right. These cartoons.
I had moments with all three of these.
Beep Beep was released on May 24th, 1952. In regards to what happened on that day, plans were put in motion to create a film adaption of the Wile E. Coyote cartoons entitled Acme vs. Coyote. They've been working on it ever since.
They just keep pushing it.
The show was directed by Chuck Jones, written by Michael Maltese. Regards a fun fact about this short, this is the second ever Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner cartoon.
Yeah, and it shows.
Yeah.
I mean, no. Not to say that, like, oh, this is a primitive, like, you know, oh, it's way far removed from the Wile E. Coyote. It's not. I mean, there's a lot of great things in this that would be in the rest of the Wile E. Coyote, Roadrunner Coyote. You know what I mean. It's late. I'm tired. But there's a lot of elements of this one that would be not as prevalent in some of the later ones. So it's an early installment, but it's still interesting for a lot of reasons.
Now, what's funny about being the second one is that there's a 3-year gap in between Fast and Furious and this one. And the reason behind that is, you know, Chuck thought this was a funny one-off. And then he was like, wait a minute, this could be something here. Hey, Mike, yeah. Get back over here. Let's do more of these. These are fun.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's the kind of thing where it's like you can tell this one especially is more of a sequel to Fast and Furious than a continuation of the whole franchise. I mean, yeah, it's he's trying to recreate what worked best about that one without realizing this is going to be a full series with recurring gag mentality. So it's interesting in that regard.
And also, this cartoon showed up in a feature film that we'll get into when we reach that gag.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
It won an Oscar. No, it didn't.
No. I don't think there was... I don't think anybody from that movie was in the Best Actor category that year at the Oscars. Jeffrey Rush wasn't exactly like running from Michael Jordan or anything. not to spoil what it is.
It's Air. It showed up.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So, how did those short begin, Jordan?
Because this is early, before the Latin gags, the Latin name gags were funny. So one of the coolest things about the Latin name gag here, and then they're pretty standard, you know, they're Chuck trying to be more like the scientific name than to actually make jokes. But you get like almost like National Geographic photographs of these stills with like a black like edging around them. And I love the moment when the Roadrunner begins to speed up again and the black edge just sort of like widens out and like it brings us back to the you know the full edges of this. I just realized I'm motioning as if you can see me. We're doing this. Our video is we're not doing video on this one. So like I'm still acting like it is
back on the Discord, baby.
But yeah, no. I just like the touch of just like, you know, zooming back out of that as the Roadrunner speeds up again. And again, it's close to how they would do it, like with how they would do the still gags in this early era. It's this, and it's your standard proof of concept gag. You know, the Roadrunner flies off, Wily's astounded, and just sort of skids to a halt with his knife and fork. And I do like the gravity of the him getting his arm, like, you know, his arm falls off because it's been leaning on the knife. And I like that, but it's simple compared to some of the other proof of concept gags that we would see.
All right, so the first gag we have here is, and I'm going to say this a lot about this short in particular, but a lot of this short is in the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie, the Cody montage, including this very gag right here, where the Cody attached a spring-activated boxing glove to a large rock, which is just a funny idea.
It is.
Cody is like, what would he do? We put a boxing glove on a giant rock. Okay. And, of course, the spring causes the rock and Cody to be launched backwards instead of forwards, which then leads the glove to retract backwards. And I love the expression on the coyote as he realizes the glove is coming towards him. It's fantastic expression work as the glove hits him.
Well, it's good timing. You know, it's you know, you already have your payoff, and then of course the glove punches him in the face, and that's just the extra cherry on top that you need for a gag like that.
And this is where we get my favorite runner in this, which is funny blueprint jokes.
I like that. They shouldn't. I understand why they left that behind when they did more of the Acme-related setups, but like mostly because these took too long, because you have to give an extra 30 seconds so everybody, even the slower readers, can catch up. But the final step of this first one being Roadrunner Burger. Love how Maltese and Jones write Wily, but you can clearly hear their voices as they do it.
Yeah, the drama end on the Roadrunner, and then what else happened to Chuck? Roadrunner Burger. Yes.
Well, he has a burger.
Yes. Love it.
And then this is the anvil type rip gag that, well this version of it is a little modified from the version that we see in Space Jam. But yeah, no, it's probably one of the most classic Wily gags, and there's a reason why they used it in something like Space Jam, where the logic is there, the timing of him for getting gravity and springing back upwards is perfect. In my opinion, it is too early in the run for them to think of a good enough ending for it, because once we see Wily falling, it's like, okay, parachute doesn't work, and then he takes aspirin, and that only barely works. Like, if it was later on, there would be some other, like, he'd slam into something else, or it'd be something else that falls with him. And so I think they just were stuck for an ending, but they weren't good enough at it yet to really do a good ending for that.
We then get the classic of free drink of water gag, where, you know, he sets up this water this water gag, and oh yeah, we got another blueprint, which is, you know, Roadrunner lifts glass of water, pulling up match. Match crashes on the matchbox. Match likes to fuse the TNT. Step four. Boom! I feel like he put that. I feel like he put that in there for his own amusement with the coyote.
Yeah, he's trying to. He's trying to have fun.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, these are great gags. I agree. Yeah. So he's waiting for the coyote, for a Roadrunner to get the water, speeds right by it. That coyote is confused. as the roadrunner comes behind him with a sign that makes no sense, but it's funny, which is roadrunners can't read and don't drink. Don't think about it. It just works.
Jones just wields this kind of cartoon logic all the time. Like, it doesn't make sense, but it makes sense in that way.
So stupid. It may be stupid, but it's also dumb.
Yes, exactly.
And this leads us into the cactus mine segment of this, which I... Yes?
It's a different approach. Like, I'd forgotten they did this one. It's because it's, like, unlike a lot of usual Roadrunner Coyote gags, because it's more akin to something you'd find in any other cartoon, because it's just a chase sequence, and it's the kind of thing that doesn't... They don't realize... It belongs, but not in the way that they're doing it at this point.
I mean, let's just say what it is. It's Chuck kind of doing the dot in the line years before. But, like, it's kind of abstract animation in a way. They're just dots, and they're going through a maze, and occasionally you cut back to the characters to keep up appearances. Like, yes, these are the characters. But it also feels like maybe Chuck's just trying to show off a bit. Like, hey,
maybe a bit. Yeah, I can do this now.
A little bit.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a different kind of extended gag for these characters. And it's odd they tried it back here. But it's similar to the different roadways that they did, the gag they did in the first one, I believe, or at least early on. But I do like the visual of the different colored lights on the cap in a long trail. And I always laugh because, you know, they're doing this whole chase thing and they're jumping from here to there. And I always laugh at the red light just... You just see a red light without knowing what it means, just hanging, and you just see Wily just trembling and hanging from the cliff in peril. I love
which,
that reveal.
Also really nice animation of the coyote going over the ledge. It's very nicely done.
Very good.
I enjoyed that. And then just, you know, as they're doing the chase, the roadrunner dot just eventually is off on the corner as the coyote dot is still running around.
He's chasing himself.
Oh my gosh.
And again, there's so many gags in this that are just like Wily getting so involved in the motions and the structure of the chase that he forgets what he's really after. Like, again, the second part of this that I love is there's the little zigzag trail where you just go up and down for a while, and once it ends, Wily is still too busy going up and down that he loses control and bonks his the light out. And that leads to a very classic gag, which is the very classic Looney Tunes gag of someone lighting a match and seeing a room full of dynamite. Although I'd forgotten about the payoff, which is the cacti outside rearranging themselves to spell yipe.
Very Looney Tuney. Very Looney Tuney.
I will say, I find it really funny that right after an extended, a really long gag like that, we get a 7-second long catapult fail gag. Like, they weren't used to properly structuring these yet, in my opinion.
No, like, I think in any other... if this was later, that dot gag would have been the ending. You know, here's this big, long, extravagant thing. But no, they're new. So it's like, no, we're gonna do the big, long, extravagant gag as gag number 3. It's like, okay.
I mean, yeah, because if it was in the later 50s, then that gag would end with the cactus rearranging themselves to spell the end.
Oh, yeah.
You know, catapult gag. Fine. Rocket gag. Not much, but I like that. I like the little Eat a Joe's ending.
That's how you know it's early 50s.
Yeah, Eat a Joe's.
Hell yeah.
Rocket skates gag.
I really love the desert background during this roller skate bit. Very nice, nicely detailed as he tries to compose himself using these rocket skates.
Yeah. I mean, I this was when I realized, oh, that's why the mind gag was the middle of the cartoon, because this is the ending gag. Or at least one of them, because there's another gag after this. Again, structure, it was early. But I like this as an extended gag, and I like how the enemy here is Wily's lack of control, because the whole thing is that the skates keep moving forward. It's just Wily that keeps, you know, not realizing his surroundings, and, you know, it doesn't realize that he can't just travel in a straight line. And he has to be more aware of things, or else he's going to keep being yanked in one direction. I love the moment at the very end of this where the skates run out of juice and a very small Wily stops in midair and looks at us defeated. Like soggy already.
And like, oh. And just falls to the ground. He holds an a rip thing of a reef, R.I.P. Yes. Reef.
Like a bouquet of flowers at a funeral, yeah.
The one thing that would have been this ending is fine. What really sold it is, because he sends it into the ground, I was expecting the reef to just fall on top of him. Just like, pfft.
Yeah.
That just, but no.
So, but yeah, no. And then the end of that gag is bringing us back to the free water gag, which is the perfect way of Wily making himself backfire, which is one of the best things about these, where Wily is unfortunately his own worst enemy.
Yes, which again also has me going like, oh, like the because I was watching some going. And that's the end of the cartoon. Wait, there's one more gag.
Yep.
There's one more. We have to end with him getting practically killed. For real this time. With this train bit.
It's not a ton new, but I actually see this gag as the beginnings of the concepts that would lead to the tunnel painting gag and all the other gags like it, where like Wily creates a reality that he's trying to fool the Roadrunner with, and it ends up being more real than he could even think because of the logic of the cartoon, because it has to end with him losing all the time. And yes. It would be something that I'm glad they picked up here, because they just keep playing with it in different ways over the course of the rest of the run.
Yeah, and we ended with the Roadrunner on top of the train as we have at the end.
Yeah.
And that's where we iris out.
Yeah. I think a lot of this one works, even if it hadn't quite gotten to what makes this cartoon's great yet. Because there's still a lot of great small gags, great extended gags. I think the mind sequence works, despite not yet really fitting into what these cartoons would become. I think it's a really strong early effort that succeeds almost in spite of itself, in spite of its earliness.
Yeah, it's definitely an early attempt. I feel this is very much like a rough draft approach to what a Roadrunner Rally cartoon could be. I think a lot of repetition. It's a thing where you recognize the gags, but you recognize them better because they would be kind of retooled in future like unique gags. So what I'm classifying is, it's like when you're writing a rough draft paper and you get the grade back, and it's like a B+. You know, yeah. It's not bad, but you do the final draft, hey, and now it's an A, or it's an A+. Yeah. Like, it's the same material, but you further improved it. And that's exactly what this cartoon is. It's a very nice B+ rough draft.
Yeah. No, exactly. Despite all that, I still give it a 4 out of 5. Just because it's a really good Roadrunner cartoon.
I'm going to be a little bit more rough and give this a 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah, admittedly, I should have given it that. But I love it too much for that. It's like I grade most of these on a curve because I just love the Roadrunner Coyote cartoon so much. So the second short that we have here is Scrambled Aches. This one came out on January 26th, 1957. This is a total nerd shit on this day, but I reward it. I reward you with it for doing one that might not be too lost on you. So my total geeky, no one cares about this on this day. The Ibirapuera Planetarium is inaugurated in the city of Sao Paulo, Brazil. This is the first planetarium in the Southern Hemisphere. So, I think that's cool as heck because, you know, you tend to think of the Southern Hemisphere as a lot of countries that get to things later than the Northern Hemisphere. There's whatever you want to say about that. But, like, I kind of love it. Like, all right, now we finally have planetariums there. Now South America has things like that, and then they can embrace science. So, it's pretty awesome.
Yes. And to appeal to all you WWE fans in the audience,
yeah.
Hulk, also known as Michael Hegstrand, was also born on this day, was with WCW, was with the WWF, Legion of Doom, born in St. Paul, Minnesota, passed away in 2003. What reason?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he
it
died
was a heart attack.
Of fire.
No, I checked. It was a heart attack because I wanted to make sure we could mention it, because sometimes if they die in a fire, you don't mention it. I know about this because of of my mid-2000s hyperfixation on action figure lore. Hawk was part of a tag team in the WWE in the 80s and 90s, probably 90s. The Road Warriors. It was him and Animal, I believe. And Hawk did his thing. And apparently he was writing a whole WWE tell-all book by the time of his heart attack, which means it's Vince's fault.
That sounds suspicious as hell. Yeah. He's going to do a tell-all book.
I blame Vince.
Did Vince just pop out of nowhere and inject Hawk with, like, I don't know, beef stew or something else?
Because that's what I think about when I think of something that gives somebody a heart attack. Beef stew.
Oh, no.
Hey, this is really good for my indigestion. You know what? Thanks, Vince. That's all.
Now they'll never know that the WWE is a corrupt company.
But they'll know that beef stew is delicious.
McMahon's beef stew. Buy it at your local food establishment. Hulk says it's okay. Isn't that right, Hulk?
Yeah, what? Brother.
No.
If you don't, what are you gonna do with the when this can of beef stew comes for you?
No. Well, actually, I didn't say Hulk. I said Hawk. Hulk gives A-OK. Isn't that right, Hulk? Help me. He loves it.
Why do we have to have two wrestlers that sound so different, so similar to each other when you call them?
I don't know. I don't know. Who directed and wrote this cartoon?
Chuck Jones and Michael Maltese.
No shit. Can I say something weird about the opening of this cartoon? Why is the opening title music a Foghorn Leghorn cartoon?
I don't know.
Right, like,
vexing.
It's not. It sounds like a Foghorn Leghorn cartoon, which I would love to see. Yeah. Foghorn Leghorn trying to chase the Roadrunner. I say, boy, you're too fast, son. Abide by the speed limit, boy. What you do?
You know, if you wanted a way of making the Roadrunner Coyote cartoons unwatchable, that would be a good one.
Because, like, Wily chasing Foghorn Leghorn would be boring as hell.
Yeah. The Foghorn chasing the coyote, you know. That's a little funny, I guess. Scrambled Eggs was on the second disc of the... No, not the second disc. The fourth disc, more like it, of the second Golden Collection, which was the one that I watched over and over because I loved all of those Roadrunner Coyote cartoons. And this one I watched a lot and I really liked. It's a good one. Because Mark sent me a screenshot of something in this cartoon as he was going down for the notes. And I'm like, oh, I know this one.
Oh, yes. And we'll get to it. But it's
oh, yes, we will.
This short is so much fun.
It's one of my favorites. So, getting into it. I like the stills for the opening because Roadrunner and Coyote are coming right at us. And I like that. I wrote down the funny Latin names. Roadrunner is Tastius Supersonicus and Coyote is Eternally Famicious. So they're getting funny. Yeah. When I think of the stylized yellow desert backgrounds that the bulk, the meat of these would have, I think about this cartoon specifically because especially in the proof of concept gag, it's so stylized. It's barely even like a realistic desert. It's really abstract. It has more shapes and just various things rather than just like a full blocked out background. It's more avant-garde, and I kind of dig that. This proof of concept gag, I like it because it just keeps building. Because, okay, Wily watching the Roadrunner behind him while skidding into the dirt is funny. Then him turning around and getting a mouthful of dirt is funny. The bridge being out is funny. And us not even... And us not even seeing the crash, just hearing it off screen, that is also funny. It just builds on itself and gets even funnier as it goes. I love that. Because the first gag we have back here is the fake leg gag, which ends up being like a twisted up because the runner. Yeah,
I love that. I like that.
The absurdism of this one is great because, like, okay, we see that it's a fake leg, but then because of just the cosmic poetic justice of it all, Wiley just ends up being twisted and it, the same way that his leg, the fake leg would have been, just to balance things out. I like how bizarre that is. The firecracker lasso one is simple. It's very simple because, you know, all right, he has a lasso. Oh, it gets tied up around him. But I like the shot of Wiley eyeing us right before the explosion. Whenever he looks at us for help, it's always really funny. And then this, like, because again, we're now in the bulk of the Acme Products era of Wile E. Coyote cartoons, much like the upcoming film, Coyote vs. Acme, which is in theaters January 2025. The fan sale gag is one of these, because it's Acme Products, you know, the fan sale, all of those.
Wait a minute. What's that? The fan?
You're all fire!
Okay, well played. I could hear the moment you came up with that, and you know what? That was worth it. Oh my god, that was perfect.
I put a soundboard in the Discord chat since we last left, so now there's stupid shit.
It's solely because of the yearlies, because we put so many ridiculous soundboard things. And the thing is, because it's a limited amount you can put in there at any one time. So, like, oh, you know, hopefully we get all the right spots. But, like, and that one we have like ridiculous meme-y shit, and I love it. But yes, Yo Babe, it's great. But yeah, no, I like the simplicity of the because the whole thing is that, like, you know, he doesn't see a turn and he goes into a mat. It took me a second to realize this, but there's a massive body of water in this desert. That shouldn't be there. It's a desert. Hence, no water. And there's a massive body of water there. I mean, I get it for the purpose of the gag, but really? I mean, I understand that Chuck and Michael are eschewing logic, but, like, it takes me out of it a little bit. It doesn't sink the cartoon for me, but, like, really?
Because sometimes you need to go down to the river.
Into the river.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Can this show be any more Jerseyan?
No, it cannot. But yeah, I like the little simplicity of the fan on the sail peeking out of the water, and we don't even see Coyote Wiley. But yeah, now that happens, and you know they slam into a rock, and I like just the big crash pile, and then Wiley just sort of getting out of the rubble and just going on to the next. The rocket flying off gag, another classic one, because the whole thing is that, you know, it flies underneath him and then flies back over him, and we just have this visual of Wiley coming around the corner with most of his skin scraped off, acting like nothing's different. It's great. It's a very funny. He's smiling even. He's like, okay, let's go. And you're like, Wiley, haven't you forgotten something? I would have loved it if they kept that for the next gag.
Yes, where we get this anvil gag, which, until we reach the end of it, this was my favorite gag of the short. But, yeah, he has this... He's tied a balloon to an anvil, which, again
physics people,
I love the...
Turn away.
I love the... Again, just, he's become so desperate. It's like, fuck you! Tie a balloon to an anvil! We'll see what happens. So he ties a...
Tie a balloon to an anvil was the rejected title of Taiyo Ribbon.
Really? Tony Orlando gets a reference?
I'm coming home.
You referenced the fan.
Now I've got to
go home!
So anyway, so while you...
If you receive my letter today,
You're damn right I did, and I'll do it again.
Oh, we're in hell. Yeah. The, yeah. By the way, we missed a very simple rock catapult gag in there, but it's sometimes the simplest one. Like, yes. The anvil blew.
Yeah.
So, no, he lets go of the anvil. The anvil drops. The runner steps away.
Telephone poles.
Devils catapult it back up, and the best shot in this thing is the shot of the anvil in the air. And it stays up there for a good while.
Yes, I love that. I love that.
Just to be like, it's like, you know what's going to happen, but we're going to just wait for this anvil to drop.
Just pat it out. I know. It'll be funnier.
As it just falls down, I believe, onto Wily? Yes, it just crushes him?
Yeah. What's very funny is that, no, not onto Wily, but because he thinks it's going to land on him. And I love him looking over and seeing the anvil coming back and already just knowing. He's just like, just looking at it going, oh no, yeah, we know how this ends. And then it breaks the part of the cliff he's on, and Wily just realizes he's all right and then springs into fear once he sees the cliff's been severed. And that's another one this episode where we hear the crash, but we don't see it. And I kind of love those. The spring gag, too simple. It's another classic, but it's very simple. Spring goes off, he's stuck in it. Dehydrated boulder gag. What's great about it is that you think it's going to be Wily setting off the whole box and getting crushed underneath him. But the timing of just the boulder in his hand blowing up and crushing him is the best kind of subversion. Like, okay, you think it's going to be this whole big thing. It ends up just being the one. And the timing of that is, that's fantastic. And then what might be one of my all-time favorite Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner gags of all time, the steamroller gag.
Yes.
So first of all, how lovingly Wile E. looks at the steamroller while setting it up, just giving it a little pat as it takes off. I love that. He says so much pride in the first bit of this. And again, as the steamroller fires ahead, you just see Wile E. running after it supportively. Just see him zoom. I love that.
As the steamroller meets the Roadrunner,
POV
and we
shot.
Get a fucking nicely done perspective shot of the steamroller getting the Roadrunner. It's really impressive.
It's fantastic.
You can work on that, Chuck. That's really impressive stuff, especially for this time. So the Roadrunner's speeding along, and we're like, okay, well, something's gonna happen.
Yeah.
And then we see one of the best, funniest signs, I think, in Looney Tunes history.
In case of steamroller, use detour. Perfect. Perfect.
Oh man, that should be the album title to something.
I also love, I mean, the payoff of this, where this was all to get the Roadrunner into a cannon and fire, is pretty good because it just focuses more on Wily and his struggle for the rest of this. But I also love the dawning horror and disbelief at the different points when Wily realizes this doesn't work. And you just see the reveal of the Roadrunner riding the cannonball out, which is actually pretty awesome. He does a lot of really awesome things in this.
Okay, that was good. What killed me was the reveal, because while he's looking into the cannon, and you see a white light, and there's a train sound effect, which I went, oh shit, is there going to be a train that comes through? No, it's just Treg Brown being silly as the cowboy gets shot out, and it's so funny. It's so damn funny.
It's great. And the thing is that you think that's the end of it. Okay, he's gotten away, and you know there's been an explosion, and this ending is perfect because Wily's already lost. And I love the shot of him just already kind of blown up and beaten, just sort of walking down after after the Roadrunner's come out of there. He's walking down, and then the steamroller comes back, and it's one of my favorite endings because you think the steamroller was out of the equation, but again, it's something he's set off coming back to haunt him. And it's one of my favorite endings because the sign he ends with, just in horror, just putting up, this is the end. It's both fitting and it's really funny.
My friend.
Yes. A little Jim Morrison there, yeah. I love this one. I love this one so much. It has some of my all-time favorite Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner gags. One of my favorite openings and closings. So many really nice moments. Maybe a little thin in the middle. Maybe some things that I didn't love in the middle, but there's a lot that makes up for it. And there's so much really good stuff. It's very much the heart of what they were trying to do, and right in the middle. And I think that I think it's one of my favorites.
You know, not to say that sometimes Roadrunner shorts don't end with the best joke in the thing, but like pretty much every time I watch one, I'd be like, there'd be a joke in the middle where I'm like, that's the best joke in this entire cartoon. And then 9 out of 10 times, the ending joke happens. I'm like, well, damn, that's the funniest joke in this entire cartoon. Yeah, did it. Both with this and the one we're coming after it. It's perfectly constructed on every level. I love cartoons like these. They're just so much fun, man. There's so much goddamn fun.
There's just a lot of great bits of this. I am giving this one a 4.5 out of 5 because I love it so much.
It was exactly what I'm giving this. I'm giving this a 4.5 out of 5 as well.
Hell yeah. All right. Cool. All right.
All right. So, Hopalong Casualty.
Yes.
Is the last one we're covering here. Came out on October 8th, 1960. Interesting on this day, I found, considering what's going on at the moment. Did you know this one, Jordan? About the certain somebody who was born on this day?
No. I found a different on this day for this one. I didn't see any birthdays for this one. Hang on, let me check. What was it? October 8th, 1960.
October 8th, 1960.
I'm confused because then that means I would have missed it. But no, I didn't see any of the people there.
On this day, Reed Hastings, American businessman, entrepreneur, and co-founder of Netflix
was born in Boston, Massachusetts.
And here's what's interesting about that. Right now people hate streaming services.
Yeah, we're in the middle of a writer's strike.
Terrible. and actors.
Everybody's striking.
The main creatives hate them, and especially Netflix, because they're getting a little bit sick and tired of, like, every time a shitty, forgettable Netflix project comes along, for some reason that becomes the most viewed thing in the world when nobody gives a shit. Like, oh, Red Notice is, like, the number one thing ever seen on Netflix, and majority of the public are like, who the fuck's watching that? No one. No one's watching that. How is that possible? Show us your notes.
Yeah, it's a tax write-off rather than a movie, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, show us your notes, and they never do. Now, I will say, he did step down in January of 2023, so he's the former CEO of Netflix. So he was also born in Boston, Massachusetts, which, as someone who recently went to Boston... Fuck you! Anyways...
That's the right idea. I did find, ironically, a baseball related on this day. I know you love
nice.
These.
Hey, Mark, play the music.
Yeah, there it is. On this day, Bobby Richardson of the New York Yankees hits a grand slam in the World Series against the Pirates. Not the most notable home run of that series, but enough to make him the only World Series MVP to come from the losing team. Because... you know, they would be tied in Game 6 and in Game 7. Bill Mazeroski, in the very last inning of that game for the Pirates, would hit a walk-off run, one of the first walk-offs to end a World Series. And the Pirates fans have loved him ever since for it. But yeah, no, Bobby Richardson had a home run for the Yankees on this day, even if they lost the series. So, Thank you. Right there, that's perfect. Right there. They just keep falling into your hand.
It just keeps happening. So
it really does.
This short was directed and written by Chuck Jones.
Hmm.
It's 1960 and Maltese is on vacation. I don't know.
Interesting. I'll have some theories about this as we get to the end of this. But important to note, this was produced by David DePatie. So this was the beginnings of the end for this unit. Another opening where Roadrunner and Coyote are coming right at us. It's a bit different because, again, they have like more blockier titles instead of just the text. It's like it's more like animated series type typeface.
Yes. And what I love about it is that when they cut to the coyote's face, you know, they say the eyes are a very important in animation. The eyes really tell you a lot about the character. And the shot we're giving the coyote, his eyes are bloodshot. This is a man at the end of his wits. Which, could that be commentary on Chuck Jones at this time? Maybe.
Perhaps.
I don't know. Perhaps, but... Yeah, this is a coyote that's just about had it with this shit.
Yep.
He is so tired.
Oh my, I don't blame him. It was the end of the 50s, you know, it was a long decade for him. There's still some funny Latin names. Roadrunner is Speedipus Rex, Coyote is Hardheadipus Ravenous. It's great. Easy proof of concept gag, you know, because they're just, this is the part of the 60s where they're really banking on Roadrunner scaring Coyote as a good comedic hook when it isn't. So they do that, and it doesn't really get that far. Then there's an extra scare gag at the end of that, where he's climbing down a pole, and the Roadrunner scares him, and he goes, him and the pole go flying, and I like the end of that, where the pole succumbs to gravity, and, you know, the timing of ground, Wily head, slam. You know, it's great.
And, Jordan, did we first see that short in Camera 3, Boys Return My Terrence, as the documentary where...
For instance, in this action of Bugs Bunny sitting down...
God. I knew you were going to get there. I was hoping you'd save it for the end.
No. No. And also, speaking of, I think this was the short that Chuck Jones gave John Canemaker. Like, hey, if you're going to talk about Cody, use this one. Because there's a lot from this short that's in that documentary. And I think that says something.
You're Bobby!
It felt like it fit. The moment passed. But who cares? I don't know, man.
Oh my god, we are so tired. Okay.
Yeah, we
are. It's another late night, but that's not quite all, folks.
Yeah, you guys missed the first 30 minutes of this where there was so much lag that Mark just started laughing at me. It's basically like, hi, welcome to That's Not Quite All, folks. I'm Mark, joined by...
How long is this going to take?
And I'm Jordan. It was that bad.
It was bad.
So,
it was bad.
Okay. In fact, lengthen that.
I will.
Yeah.
It's going to be a 2.5 hour episode in 30 minutes.
Yeah, pretty much. So, speaking of doing things that we'd already done, ready for some repeated gags?
Oh boy, are there.
Yep, because the meep meep, it's actually a bus gag, has been done before very early on. The boulder release gag we just saw in Beep Beep, and the detonator underground gag has been done before. And the way they're doing these, they're so fast, mostly to create enough time for a later gag.
Yeah, there's even a detour sign gag that gets a bit repeated with a different ending, but it's not as fun.
Yeah, no.
Dare I say it?
I mean, it's you're thinking of the Christmas package machine gag, right?
Yeah.
Which, it's... You can tell this is not in a more inspired era of Wile E. Roadrunner cartoons because the impetus that springs the trap is just the Roadrunner scaring Wile E. And that's, to me, that should be relegated for the first minute or so of the cartoon, and they kept pounding that into the first half. And so I was like, all right, he's hoisted by his own petard because the Roadrunner scares him. And so now we go through this entire trap that he set for the Roadrunner. And while it is amusing to see the little tiny present at the end and the little feet sticking out of it and walking upstage, it felt like a missed opportunity, which I think was the point.
There's even, it's been a pretty gag, there's the one where, you know, he's about to throw off some dynamite towards the Roadrunner.
Yeah, the cactus reel, yeah.
Yeah, the cactus reel. And he, once again, he gets tied up, the dynamite right next to him as he looks at us. And it's the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I should get into my theory about this cartoon now or after the big gag. Probably I should later, but like...
Yeah.
I don't think these little gags were the point of this cartoon. I think the earthquake pills gag was the whole point of this cartoon.
Yeah. Ain't it crazy how we've reached over 150 episodes and 4 Wile E. Coyote episodes and we're just now getting to the earthquake pill gag?
Well, and I'll get into this as I tie up the episode, because like... We're doing this for the gag, not the short that it's in.
Pretty much,
there's a reason for that, as we've just discussed, because name one other notable gag from this cartoon that isn't the Earthquake Pills gag. You can't do that, because they're not notable, because they're not, like, original. And, again, I have a theory about that. But Earthquake Pills. Oh, my God. I love this gag so much. This gag is a lot of build-up and a lot of subversion. Because it's like a magic trick. You believe what it's telling you for a bit. Because the whole thing is that, all right, got a bottle of earthquake pills. Lay it out for the Roadrunner to give them free bird seed. He envelops a bunch of it. No effect, goes off. And then Wile E, and then again, it's slow spool. All right, Wile E takes one, no effect. All right, they don't work. Wile E takes the rest of the bottle. And right when you think, right when you've written off the gag, when he throws away the bottle, then you get the twist, where you literally see his eyes just shoot at the bottle before it hits the road. And you see the label, not effective on Roadrunners. And the realization that he's just downed the entire bottle, so now you know what's coming, but you don't know how it's going to hit and how insane it's going to be.
There is fear in his eyes.
He's done the fuck around part of this. And now he realizes he's going into the find out portion.
Yes!
And he's not prepared. So, I will say, in a cartoon that hasn't really been well animated for a reason I'll get to, some of the best animation in this cartoon is on the pills taking effect on Wile E.
It is.
Of just it beginning to is. Throttle him about and just shaking his entire body and uncontrollably throttling him around. And it's... I like how many things they do with this. Like Wile E just sawing through the bottom of a rock structure. And Jim just hopping towards the end of a cliff and the little pieces of the cliff he jitters on collapse in succession. Just so many little pieces of this gag. You know it's going to build to something. And you think, okay... Because it wears off and you're like, all right, it's going to start up again. It started up again before. Are we really going to leave him on that cliff all right? Is that really going to be the payoff we're going for? No, because then he thinks he's okay and so he walks directly off the cliff.
It's so funny. They do this big kind of excursion of what a typical Wile E. Coyote gag is.
Yeah.
And then it's just, oh my god, we cracked it. We cracked a new method of a Wile E. Coyote joke. How are we going to end it? With the most classic way of doing a Wile E. Coyote gag, which he just falls off the damn cliff.
Yes. And it's just, it's the complete subversion. He even looks pissed off as he falls down. I love that. But it's just, it's a subversion on top of a subversion on top of subversion. It's the best kind of magic trick because you cannot predict how it's going to end. And once you do, you're still really fulfilled by it. Because if you were to introduce the top of this gag and say it's going to end with him falling off a cliff, then you may think, well, that sounds disappointing. But the road you take to get through to that, him just falling off a cliff, is amazing. And it makes it such a great payoff. And then, of course, they didn't know how to end it, so yeah. You end with the Roadrunner taken off and the end in smoke trails.
Oh, my God.
I think you should tie it up first, because I have more to say.
All right. So, a lot of this cartoon is playing the hits. It is. And, you know, it's so interesting about that, because, you know, because I go back to the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie with that 19-minute yes. Montage. Yes. And you think, well, that's literally playing the hits. Why is that more entertaining to watch than a cartoon like this, which takes the hits of previous Roadrunner cartoons, remixes them a little bit, and then ends with one big, gigantic new thing? And I think the reason for that is, well, frankly, because we've seen it before and it's presented as new. I think that's the difference. We get to the Roadrunner montage in the movie. It's already presented as, hey, we're going to show you some funny ass gags here yeah. from previous shorts that you probably either haven't seen before or haven't seen in a while. While with this short, it's kind of presented and animated, because there's no reused animation in this. It's presented as a brand new Roadrunner Coyote cartoon, and a good 75% of it are just lesser versions of gags we've even seen in this episode, and I don't believe that was planned. Was that planned, Jordan, that we would cover shorts in this episode that would be kind of referenced in Hopalong Casualty, or just...
It was not planned, and I think it actually worked for the better that was at the receiving end of some of that. It fell into place, a little happy accident.
Yeah. But, yeah, there's always the counterpoint of, well, the people didn't watch these in succession all the time. By 1960, they were. By 1960...
Yeah, it was on TV.
It was on TV. People, I think, were a little more aware of what a Roadrunner cartoon gag is, and they could probably watch this and go, oh, I remember this. I saw this last week on the Bugs Bunny show.
Yeah.
Ah, that's not really funny. Until yeah. you hit the last gag, where it leaves mm-hmm. you in such a place of joy and laughter that much like a magic trick, like you said, Jordan, it feels like it's kind of making up for the past, like, 3 or 4 minutes of just repetition. It's like, that was a great Roadrunner Wild Comedy cartoon. And then you take a step back and you look at it and go, no, that's just a really damn good gag in what's overall a pretty basic, I hate to say it, Wild Comedy Roadrunner cartoon. Should we give Amber a rating now, or should we wait till you're done?
Well, I have to give my thoughts on this.
All right. And well, that means.
Here's what I think, because I have a theory. I've mentioned this all throughout this, and I have a theory about this cartoon, and here it is. So, as a flash of lightning comes off in the distance. So, perfect. So, Chuck Jones and Michael Maltese obviously worked on a ton of Roadrunner cartoons in this period, in the 1950s especially. And I think it got to a point where they were just doing, like, they weren't even doing specific episodes anymore. They were just doing as many gags as they could, producing as many gags as they could, and getting them out there and getting them made, and then worrying about, okay, what can fit in a 7-minute runtime or a 6-minute runtime. And my theory is that they had one of these they could not fit into an episode that they were trying to get into its own thing and to structure accordingly, and they could not because this is a 3 or 4 minute long gag. Maybe they wanted to do something for it in the pilot that they were working on and it couldn't fit there. So, and then this is probably around the time that Michael Maltese left the studio. And so Chuck Jones is like, look, we still have this gag. We need to put it out there because it's a really good gag. why don't I just throw in a couple of old recycled Roadrunner Coyote gags with new animation and new stuff, different quality from what this one is, because there is a difference in quality between Earthquake Pills gag and everything else. It's palpable. And what if you just create a cartoon around it just so people can see this gag and just so you can get it out there? It's like they wanted to make the gags around it lighter and more like reruns so that the last gag would be worth it to people and would come off well. And I think that while that gag itself is amazing, I wish that it would have been possible for that unit to get other gags to build up to it that weren't reruns. And I think that it was at the point in the studio's run where they just needed to get it out there because they didn't know how much longer they'd have or which animators would still be there and what budget they'd still have. But I don't know. I feel like they should have pulled the trigger on it earlier and picked a better assortment of lead up gags. But as it is, the Earthquake Pills gag is amazing, but there's still an extra 3 minutes that doesn't feature it that lags this one down. And I can only rate it accordingly. So that's at least my theory. I could be very wrong, but that's what feels like to me.
So in the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie, the Earthquake Pills scene is the second to last clip in it.
Good.
At least in this Wikipedia article is yes it is. It's in sequence. Awesome. Yeah, so that's the second to last one. I feel watching the earthquake sequence within that montage is much more fulfilling. Because that's solid throughout.
Yeah.
You know. So I think that's the best way to watch the earthquake gag scene. Also, you could watch it by itself. You know, it holds up incredibly well. But yeah, I definitely believe your theory, Jordan. Because this, which we didn't disclose this, that Earthquake Pills gag is the longest Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner gag in the original run, if ever. Now, that's the longest gag we ever did, was the Earthquake Pills gag.
Yeah.
And you can tell why. You can tell why, because it needed that anticipation. They couldn't... I bet you, when Chuck and Maltese were just putting these shorts together, they're like, okay, like, I don't know, if we cut the anticipation by like a minute, would that fuck with the gag? Yes, it would. We can't afford to lose a minute of this gag because it's built so much on waiting, and that's a very risky thing to do in animation. And being so confident in a gag where half the joke is just nothing happening, but that's part of the gag. That's risky. Especially at this time, freaking 1960, you're like, yes, audiences will totally just stand there and watch the Wile E doing nothing, preparing for something to happen for 2 minutes. Like, no, if done really well, it can be effective.
Yes. But this was not done very well, except for that one gag, so.
Exactly, yeah, that's the weird thing. So, for this short, I'm gonna give this short a 4 out of 5 animals. That's what I'm giving it.
Really? 4 out of 5?
4 out of 5. That may be stabling the Earthquake Pills.
No, I don't usually do that. Okay. Alright. No, I'll, you know, I'm not gonna judge. To me, the earthquake gag, the Earthquake Pills gag is enough to garner a 3.5 on its own. That is all I can give this cartoon because literally.
That's fair. That's 100% fair, man.
It comes up with all of the goodwill that I can give this cartoon. If it's just one gag that come here for the gag. The short itself is like not, just watch this gag. You don't need to watch the rest of it. That's literally
which give it a full rating. Which, by the way, it's so fair saying this because like literally right when we're about to hop on, I'm like, this short's amazing. It's not a physical media. What the hell? Get on that. Cut your choice. But now I'm like, well, it is a physical media. Yeah. It's on the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie DVD. It's on the other ways. It's on YouTube. It's definitely on YouTube. Just watch this one. Not gonna lie. I would love, like, Greg Ford or somebody to, like, do a commentary on this short. Like,
This is fine. Okay. Here it is. Okay, so this earthquake bills gag, guys, is the best.
Yeah.
The timing is great. The animation by Ken Harris is fantastic or whatever. It's just deadpan the entire... Like,
what can they say about anything else in it? Let's see what you guys have to say about these Wile E. Coyote shorts. Our comment is from fan of the podcast, I would say, Cody at Cody So Yeah, who is a big Wile E. Coyote fan, I believe. Had some thoughts on each of the individual ones. Beep Beep, he says, so many funny expressions from Wile E and the realization on his face when he tried to get the water. Yeah, I love that gag. I love that the setup and the eventual payoff of that gag and just how just done he is at the very end of it.
Yeah, just the whole roundabout nature of it. Because you don't even think about it, about the water gag, and then just it's a great ender to that whole series of gags. It's just not only has he messed up, he's messed up by his own hand twice.
Yes, and it's a real good sneaker effort, too. You don't expect it to come. He's the scramble eggs. The fake leg gag is a funny twist. I wish it was talked about more. Yeah, I mean, it's very much par for the course as far as Chuck Jones's writing is concerned. And I think that, you know, it's right up there with the things that don't make sense, but make sense enough to not make sense, if that makes any sense.
No, it doesn't. But we talked a lot about this gag in the episode. Just, you know, it's one of those, and I brought this up when we did the Super Salesman with Daffy. Fake leg jokes just always get to me. I don't know why. It's just so funny. It's like, oh no, that person's leg. Oh, wait, it wasn't the leg? That's funny.
And for those of you not in the Philadelphia area, when Mark says leg, he means leg. It's very much like the SpongeBob thing, you know, my face and also my leg, but mostly my face. And Hopalong Casualty, Cody goes on to say, loved everything about the earthquake pills scene. Yeah, so do we. That's why we put it on this episode, because we wanted to talk about the earthquake pills gag.
You know, it does the heart good to realize that, you know, because we've done episodes like this episode where we mostly did it just to cover this one gag. But it's good to know that Looney directors also were like, I'm going to make an entire cartoon, spend the studio's money just so I can do this one gag I really wanted to.
Yeah, they clearly didn't have anything left. But
we're just like the Looney Tunes directors.
You know, but at least we put more effort into it than they did to the rest of Hopalong Casualty. So thank you for your comment, Cody. I hope you enjoyed our takes on those shorts. Before we get to what we're doing next week, we just want to take this opportunity to thank the people that have subscribed to our Patreon. People such as TriScrew, Andrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the guy, not the drink. They have helped us out by pledging anywhere from $1 to $5 on our Patreon, and they get perks like being thanked in the middle of an episode in addition to their commentaries that they get that we record, as well as early access to episodes and handwritten letters from me and also playbacks of live streams. So if you want to become a patron just like those four that I thanked in the middle of this episode, you can follow our patron at patreon.com/TNQAF.
All right. So for next week's episode, we're not done with Chuck Jones yet.
We're just not.
We never are. So, a couple weeks back, we covered the one-shots of First Feeling and... Kinda Robert Gibson. But for next week's show, we're going to go back to a director who has done so many one-shots that he's built up a second episode. Oh, no. You hear that thunder?
Yeah.
Do you hear
the ghostly wail of an old sing of an old Showtime frog.
Yeah, the Michigan J Frog gods are mad at you.
Yes. Because it's only a one-shot episode. It's more like, here's some more one-off Chuck Jones cartoons, and also here's a fun episode we haven't gotten to yet. So for next week's show, we're covering Chuck Jones one-shot or one-shot adjacent shorts. The ones we're covering are Rocket by Baby.
Okay.
Because they just love doing baby shorts. Nelly's Folly, which sounds interesting. Whenever I hear about Nelly's Folly, it's like, oh, it's like the most adult Looney Tune that they ever made or whatever. So we'll see how that goes. And I feel like if I see it.
Another Faragi evening.
Yes. The 1990 sequel to One Froggy Evening. And the last 1990s Looney Tunes short we're covering, I'm certain of it this time.
Yeah, we thought we had them all when we did. And so now we're going to do this one and cross that one off. And I wonder if Mark's going to like that one. I'm kidding. I know you like the first one fine. I just give you shit about the one half star you took off of it, so...
I'll get my revenge.
You're Bobby!
All right, so let's end the show now.
All right.
Before we abuse the soundboard anymore.
All right, that's the end of this week's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, follow me at MarkHalem1995.
And you can follow me on at TallGuySchmidt.
If you'd like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow us at that_Looney, both on Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find our podcast wherever podcasts are really available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon Music. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we have clips from the show, either sets of visuals or with the video footage in it. We've had a lot of nice success on there recently. We've got more videos coming out every week, so check us out there. And also, if you didn't heed my warning already, check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/TNQA.
All right, so until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan. And
You're Bobby!
Good night, everybody.